Good afternoon and welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, just turning off my cell phone, and I won't leave it on because maybe the Montreal police have my number and are checking on it, perhaps. So if I don't shut it off, then it might ring. And
close to home, too close to home.
Say bonjour.
And I just switched my headphones because the righty was dead. And anyway, that's probably more behind-the-scenes stuff than
all
our listeners want to know.
All the tech is in place, and we're ready
okay.
to rock.
Okay. Yes, Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of the screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today, we will go down to Guelph City Hall, where things are getting heated and the budget process has only barely begun. That heat is coming from a city council putting Guelph Municipal Holdings, Inc. on hold and on the unexpected firing of transit manager Phil Mahar. So why is everyone down at 1 Carton Street so angry these days? And then, the opposition in Ottawa is getting pretty angry themselves about the Trudeau government's fundraising activities, high-level events where people are paying top dollar to hobnob with cabinet ministers, and even the prime minister himself. Is this politics as usual? Or should we be concerned that money is buying access? And then finally, we will head back to Standing Rock, North Dakota, where things got hairy last week when police in riot gear started busting heads at the protest, which created an immediate reaction from protest supporters across North America, probably creating even more sympathy for the cause. So what's the next move in this pipeline fight? And we're going to start this week, and we are so glad that it's almost over. But the U.S. election is reaching its crescendo, and things are tighter than ever in the race. Tighter than when we last talked about it, which saw that maybe Hillary Clinton was going to cakewalk to victory Tuesday night. But civilization may, in fact, now go down the tubes, thanks to none other than Anthony Weiner.
Oh.
Who...
Sorry, audible sigh.
Couldn't help himself. You know, three strikes and you're out. And it seems like, in this case, with Anthony Weiner, three strikes and society is out.
It's like, Weiner, did you not get the message, Weiner? Like, come on, man. Really? Sexting? I guess, is Huma Abedin and now his ex-wife? They're done, right?
I guess. I think they're separated. They don't have the paperwork to call her
an ex. We don't normally do the
yet.
Hello gossip style stuff on the... on the air, but it's along those lines. But of course, the bleed from that has been that there's emails on Abedin's computer that are some of the quote missing emails, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary Clinton's scrubbed emails, I guess. I don't know. It's the FBI has released this, and of course, they've taken some flack. Director James Covey is under the gun a bit. It seems that he may have actually broken some kind of law in terms of influencing elections. I can't remember the name of the act. It's
I can't remember the name.
For 10 points, Adam, name the act.
I can't remember the name of the act, but it basically, there's a certain set of guidelines for when a federal investigation involves someone who is presently running for election. So, yeah, he seems to have hopscotched over that. As much as this kind of like, I don't know, the world fell on the situation, The thing is, we don't know what the emails are because they haven't said. They haven't said if it pertains to... Because what they're doing...
It's like, Bill, can you get some milk? Or, you know,
yeah.
Hamma, can you get some milk, right?
Whatever. It's like, hey, has anyone seen that Game of Thrones? I'm thinking of checking it out, but I don't want to get involved.
Yeah.
They don't know what the emails are because they're investigating Anthony Weiner for sexting with someone who is underage.
This man disgusts me. Sorry.
No, it's fair. It's completely fair. But
every time he says his name, I go,
But yeah, so they're investigating him. Apparently, this was a computer that he and his wife shared, and some emails were found upon it. Now, you listen to Donald Trump, they found the quote unquote mother load, and I guess this is all the all the evidence that was missing to put Hillary away forever. But that's not what they found. We don't know what they found. And actually, a lot of Democrats and actually a lot of people have been saying, like, Can you just tell us like what it is you found and whether it pertains to Clinton? They don't even know if it pertains to Clinton. It's just assumed because Huma Abedin's been her longtime advisor. And the
frothing up of the whole thing as well by Donald himself, which he does so well.
He's frothy.
And I'm not sure if it's directly a cause of this or attributable to this, but one poll, an ABC Post poll, had Trump at 46 to 45%, which also seemed to cause a bit of a market panic this week. It was like,
yeah.
Look at all the arrows on the stock exchanges. It's like, well, it's going to go down. So that's probably a bit of a warning sign, I guess, in some ways. And they've both been hitting the trail fairly hard. I think Hillary maybe more so than Donald because... she was in, I think Florida is one of the key states for both of them. It's like Florida needs to be one. Of course, as we know, historically, Florida has been problematic in the past.
She sent
out all the surrogates here and there, Obama and Chelsea, and everybody's been out. You know,
Bernie.
Stumping it. Bernie as well. I guess so. Yeah.
Bill.
Bernie as well. And Bill, of course, doing the rounds. So I think this is to probably try and... I mean, it was really Donald says he's up in all the polls, which is incorrect. There's one poll that said he was ahead. There's only one poll that says he's ahead. Everything else is like it's Clinton, and how massive, the percentages are something like 68 to 31 on 538 Nate Silver's site. So it's
solid. I mean, they put a lot of stock in the national polls, but as we've been saying all along, this is a state-by-state process, and the state polls are actually holding fairly steady for Clinton. It's not the barn burner it was this time last week, but it's definitely definitive, and I think MSNBC did a survey of Pennsylvania polls, and they're up the worst poll is like she's up 2 points over Trump, but the average is really more like 4 or 5 points over Trump. And that's still a fairly safe blue state. So that'll probably be an easy win for her, even though you have a lot of the Trump surrogates talking about, watching the cities, code. That's one thing. And it, also in this kind of like examination of the electoral map, they pointed out that Trump basically has to win all of the 10 toss-up states, the 10 states that could go either way. Trump has to basically win all of them to get to just 266. You need 270 to win. So not only does he have to win everything that's on the table, not only does he have to like win all the games and then make it to the showcase showdown and then, bid right so he could win both showcases. He has to like come back for Champions Week and like that. I'm not sure where the metaphor got off track here, but he has to basically win everything he can and then turn one of the blue states red.
That's tricky. It sounds like his technique or approach, anyway, has been to lots and lots of advertising.
Yeah.
I think he says, we got to beat her. He keeps saying, we got to beat her. It sounds bad after a while. He just keeps saying that.
Did you see him yesterday in Florida where he's like, he was basically like talking like about his inner monologue. He's like, you got to keep it cool, Trump. Keep it cool.
Oh, I missed that.
Stay on message. You got to keep. And he's on stage doing this. Stay cool, Trump. And
forgot his medication. Maybe.
I don't know what it is, but
my heart's palpitating. I don't know.
It's just one of these bizarre things that he does, and it's one of those things like you can't like you say to Trump supporters, you can't see this. Like you're really not looking at this and going, yeah, it's fine. He's talking to himself on stage.
Unfortunately, I didn't see the final World Series game. But I guess there was a lot of advertising during that as well. And I heard the theme was change, choice, and corruption. So I need to, of course, try and find the corruption ad and watch it on YouTube because I'm sure it's pretty classic. I don't know. So I guess their approach has been to just chuck money at that. It's probably a good as good a strategy as any at this point. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, This is that sort of where you're just waiting for it to hit, right? We're in that sort of not patient mode, but there's nothing, you know, it's all going on at the same time. Nothing's going on, you know, it's creeping up to Tuesday and not Super Tuesday.
There's almost nothing that can be done now. I mean, the email thing last Friday was like a surprise, and that it was like the latest surprise and an October full of surprises. And
it would have to be something incredibly spectacular at this point to derail it.
Yes,
because pretty much this week has just been hubbub. I did read something else too, that there's a civil suit with charges against Trump regarding the assault of a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
And at first I thought that was one of those things just being posted that, you know, not on a legitimate site, but it was on the New York Times, so I'm fairly sure that...
No, it's a real thing.
It's a real thing.
Trump University goes in November.
Yeah.
And then this case goes in December.
Mm. So is it true that Trump Tower in Toronto has failed? I just caught that before airtime. Is it Trump Tower in Toronto finished?
No.
So, and it's hard to tell sometimes, too, when you're looking at the feed as to whether it's a legitimate...
But that's
thing, or is it?
I think that's one of the underreported stories on this. Is like the effect this is having on his business interests, like that he's launching a new line of like hotels meant to like skewer to millennials, but that it's not called. They're not called Trump. They're called Zion.
Zion.
Yeah.
Hmm. Which, what's that like the Conrad? The Hilton Hotel is Conrad as opposed to there's a chain called Conrad. Who was the founder?
Right, but this is what's happening is that it's having an effect on his business interests. Nobody wants to stay in a Trump hotel, you know. Once like one of the premier names in luxury and awesome living and being surrounded in golden opulence, nobody wants to be
golden
there anymore.
Toilet, probably, yeah.
And Esquire had a great sort of photo spread of somebody went into like Trump Tower and like the public areas of Trump Tower because there's apparently a public garden in Trump Tower.
That was nice of him to put that in.
So you can go into Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue and kind of wander around in these public areas and go up to these public gardens, and it's a disaster. I mean,
the plants are all dead.
The plants are fine, but it's clearly that maintenance issues are persisting in Trump Tower.
This doesn't want to pay anybody.
Yeah,
that's
no,
a,
but
that's a whole
I mean,
other show.
That's another. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how many after the election's over, how many stories we get about campaign workers not being employed. Or not getting their paychecks. I mean, but yeah, the Trump Tower tour. They took a picture of like the directory when you go in. There's no names on the directory. There's like this trophy case there that's sitting empty. One of the public gardens, which is on like the fourth floor of Trump Tower, you can't get into. There's no access. It's apparently been closed for like a month. And then the one on the fifth floor, there's like patio chairs stacked in one corner. And it's just, when you think of the name Trump, you don't think of how you would imagine a Hotel 6 would look.
Like a storage
and then
cupboard.
That's kind of what it was. Yeah.
Is this the broom closet? No, it's actually the lounger. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. And so this is, and then somebody took a picture of they got access to like one of the kitchens or something. And then it's like, oh, everything's stainless steel, but you can see the stainless steel, quote unquote, peeling off one of the ovens.
Ooh.
So it's like, even that is bollocks in terms of the Trump. And it seems to be emblematic of the whole Trump empire. It's like this shiny gold wrap thing that, you know, put it underneath and it's not
it's
gold
really
at all.
Cubic zirconia or whatever.
Yeah.
I think I'll mention at this point
mention it.
That on Tuesday we are having extensive election coverage here at CFRU. This is our first foray into international elections on a larger scale. Original hits, original stars. We're going to have the lineup. Some of the voices that you know. Adam's going to be phoning in because he's still got a wake, but we'll be glad to have him on the line, among others. And speaking of Trump's business interests, I'll mention that one of the interviews we'll be having is with David Milne. Hopefully it hasn't happened yet, but we're hoping to have him on. And he lives right beside Trump's golf course in Aberdeen and has been fighting the kind of stuff you were talking about for at least 10 years. I think it's more, because every single interaction with the Trumps has been terrible. Tonight at 8 o'clock on Facebook, they're live streaming the movie that David Milne and others are in called You've Been Trumped Too, which talks about the situation in Scotland. And I guess that's the extent of Donald's foreign policy experiences dealing with the Scots. And he's had a heck of a time. I mean, he was, oh, I won't get into it too much now, but, you know, one of the people involved is like a woman in her 90s. And to hear her speak about it is just like, you know, anyway, we'll leave it at that. 8 o'clock tonight on Facebook. You've been Trumped too. And like I said, we're going to be speaking to David Milne, one of Trump's neighbors, in air quotes, among others. And we're actually going to have, believe it or not, and I'm going to do the dun-dun-dun, presidential candidate. A bona fide presidential candidate will be on our show. Take that to the bank. So that'll start, kickoff is at 8 o'clock on Tuesday. Please join us, and we will beat on it as much as we have in the past. However many of us, just beat it down. Beat that demon down.
We will have live coverage of the end of the world on Tuesday. Yeah. Maybe. Before we get into the next topic, we don't have confirmation yet, but I do believe that those barber tickets are gone.
The light was flashing, so we're hoping that one of our three operators has picked
it up. Yes, we didn't pick up the phone ourselves, but we will, after the commercial break, we will come back and update you on that. In the meantime, we're going to talk about Guelph City Hall. I don't think we've talked about City Hall stuff
in a while. It's been a while, yeah. We really need to get back on the rails.
Well, it's the right time of year. It's budget time. And in fact, after the show today, I'll be heading down to City Hall to cover a budget meeting. There's a meeting tonight about the proposed infrastructure levy, which is extremely unpopular in many quarters. But we're going to talk about the other thing in a minute, but another thing that was really fairly unpopular was this Guelph Municipal Holdings, Inc., which is a holding company that was created by City Council, I believe, in 2006, 2007. The idea was city-held assets would be put in this holding company, and there would be various benefits in terms of how city assets are managed. It is fairly technical, and having sat on several of the meetings, I can honestly say I barely understand it myself. But I think one of the things that came out of that meeting a couple of weeks ago, I was on the 24th, was there was a lot of confusion about the various acronyms, like between District Energy, Guelph Municipal Holdings, Inc., some confusion on this point. And then on top of that was, it seemed to be a political game between various councillors in terms of who's to blame for certain cost overruns. And I think, again, that the cost overruns, I think, tie sort of directly to the District Energy things. Not
You're
so
talking
much
about the scrap. The well-publicized scrap.
Yes.
Yeah. The outburst, or what was it?
What did Guelph Today call it? Guthrie blows a gasket.
Guthrie blows a gasket.
Which I don't.
The triptych of pictures that was there, it looked like he was blowing a gasket. I don't know, just going from the photos, but
I'm not sure he was blowing a gasket.
He was visibly angry by the sounds of it. So.
Yeah, he was visibly.
And you were there.
Angry.
You were there for this, obviously, right? Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did he cool down? Like, did it?
Oh, it was. Yeah.
Once it was just had to get that out, and then
yeah, after the break, it was all cool again. Yeah. But
was it one of those "how dare you" moments? Like,
It was very "how dare you, sir." Yeah, but I think.
Well, we can ask him when he. Yes, we should let people know that Cam is coming.
Yeah,
potentially,
well,
right?
Yes. Well, no, he is coming.
Yeah,
I will have details later in the show,
and hopefully,
in terms of other people who are coming to the show. No, he won't blow a gasket on the show. I think we're pretty.
If
laid
you do
back
the talking,
here.
He won't blow a gasket.
Nice, but no, it was. I mean, it seemed to be a lot of confusing the issue because it's about Guelph Municipal Holdings, and I think what this is sort of key getting to is whether or not the city's going to sell Guelph Hydro. Mm-hmm. I think that headline is the one that got buried in the midst of who's to blame for what and cost overruns and things like that. I think what the city is fishing for is whether or not there would be enough public support, even if it's disgruntled support, to sell Hydro.
Disgruntled support.
Yeah.
Here she comes, and she's disgruntled. Yes, I remember the last time, in 08. I was following it quite closely then. And the plan then was to sort of structure what they called a more efficient operation, and the merger was to be with Hamilton, I think, at that point. It wasn't sale necessarily. It was a merger. Now, I should mention that there's – I'm not sure if this is the inspiration or why they're feeling it out, but there is a massive local municipal hydro merger going on right now. It's taken a while. I think it was officially approved or whatever, or at least it was put together in April of last year. And it's just in the process of being approved now. It's five different municipalities. I believe Brampton's one of them, St. Catharines, like all over the place. And Omer's Pension, interestingly, is 10% of this consortium, let's call them, that are going to become an as yet unnamed hydro entity. I think it might be a bit late for Gulf Hydro to get in on this, but you never know, right? They might. And I think, is this why they're feeling it out a bit? You know, should we join the conglomerate? It will be the second largest hydro operation next to Ontario Hydro or Hydro One. I don't even know what to call anything. After deregulation, it's like nobody knows what to call anything anymore. So what are the choices? Sell, merge, or just keep it status quo? And last time it was status quo. It was very unpopular in terms of why are you getting rid of this asset that's I actually looked to see how much they made. It's a profitable business, right? It's not as if it's losing money.
No.
So normally it's like you're losing money, you want to, or also want to make some revenue, which is the other. You know, to me, this is the typical, and I'm not assigning this to anybody. The neoliberal approach is like, let's make some money. Let's sell, as they're doing with the main hydro in Ontario, to raise funds, as they did with the 407, to raise funds. And that's what we may see with Gulf Hydro, is that let's just sell it, and then we'll use the money to build all these things we want, like improve transit, blah, blah, blah. In theory, it's fantastic, but, you know, once you've lost something that's profitable. And I didn't realize Gulf Hydro was about 100, more than 100 years old. Like, it's one of the oldest utilities.
Yeah, it is.
Probably up there with the Junction Railway as well, which is, we got some old-timey stuff in town. We should just keep
it. Gulf is one big monopoly game.
We should just keep it. But in this, too, there's always the kind of coded stuff. And like I said, I'm not attributing this to anybody in town. But, you know, there was the last time it was the find efficiencies. We'll find efficiencies, which pretty much just means laying people off and sort of delegating the work to other places. Mm-hmm. And this is what I see happening with this large conglomerate, will be that there'll be a central, you know, utility people, the people in the bucket trucks, right? So rather than sort of having your power restored right away, it might take a little bit longer because the trucks are coming from who knows where, Kitchener maybe. Pick the place. These are the kind of things that I think that made people reluctant the last time. And also the fact that if it makes the city money, then why would you get rid of it, right?
But yeah, but I think, again, the issue is...
Who can we blame when it's sold? No.
Yeah, no. That is part of it, is who can we blame? There's no question that something had to be done about district energy. You know, $14 million loss is nothing to sneeze at, but I think that wasn't completely planned out when it was initiated. And of course, it's all tied to the losses in particular are focused on the business park, Hanlon Creek Business Park, which was supposed to be this huge job generating, industry generating
cash cow.
Yeah, cash cow, both for district energy, but in terms of the economic vitality of the city, which of course has not come about. And everybody was saying this is not going to come about when they started sticking shovels in the ground on that. And you know, that thing all became about the salamander. But in terms of the practicality, they broke ground on that in the summer of 2009 when
everything was in the toilet.
When everything was in the toilet. And I think I pointed this out at the time, like the northwest end of the city was dead at that time.
Yeah.
And here they are building this new business park and saying, oh, if we build it, they will come. And it turns out, no, if you don't build it, they actually don't come.
Got to write that some of the business park was rezoned for residential. Like that's how lousy it was.
Yeah.
Not completely lousy. It wasn't a total, but you know, there's still lots of space down there. Like,
yeah. But I mean, it hasn't unfolded as it was intended, right? It was supposed to be this sort of like gravitational force that just attracted all this attention to it, and of course that just didn't come about, which is why the district energy component of it failed, because they just didn't have the numbers to make it work. And at that point, it's either because you were overly ambitious in your planning, or
They're just not coming.
You didn't see the warning signs enough and chose to ignore them.
And they don't have bus service, nor do they. I don't know. That's my segue into Guelph Transit. So tell us about transit and what's been going on, Adam.
That was a rough segue.
In 5 minutes or less, yeah.
Phil Maher, who was the general manager of Guelph Transit, fired last week. Two paragraphs on the city website, kind of buried. I did a Google. Somebody pointed it out to me on Twitter. And so I went looking for it, the City Post, and I did a targeted search of the City of Guelph website through Google, looking for the words Phil Maher, and it took me 7 results pages to find it. And so that's how buried it was. But as these situations go, no reason was given. It was without cause. Mm. When you're in management, you're not union represented, so you can be terminated without cause. A lot of this seems to come down to, and this is something I posted on Politico, was did this come down to the service rationalization/review that's coming up, and that's going to be presented at Committee on the Whole on Monday. Transit is one of the 3 pilot projects that are being put forward for the first service rationalization. It's an interesting lineup because one is transit, one is solid waste management, and one is boulevard maintenance. And I noted on Politico, I don't know if there's any problems in boulevard maintenance, but there have certainly been very public problems with solid waste, and there have certainly been very public problems with transit. So I couldn't help but detect perhaps a political impetus to making these 3, two of the 3.
Because, of course, looking at boulevard maintenance is to, quote, find efficiencies. Who am I quoting? Just everybody that says, find efficiencies. It'll be contracted out, essentially, would be the plan, I think, for that.
Sure.
Because it doesn't have the problems or issues that transit had or has at times. Guelph Transit, you probably know this. By accident, I found out that Guelph Transit has like a 1-star rating on Google.
It's like a 1.4 on Facebook.
It's
too.
The lowest. I may have linked to it from Facebook or whatever. Or found the link from Facebook. It's the lowest rating of any service I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Now as to whether there's some questions of the accuracy of these things, but that's really generally you get people to sort of pump up your thing and somewhere there's a server farm somewhere where people are doing that right now. Well, but obviously not for Guelph Transit. And and you kind of know when you read a comment whether it's legit or not. And some of them were like, oh, man, like this, fraught with issues, I would say, just going by what the people have said online. But also with the firing of Phil Maher. And it's not as if they've been without issue. When was the other, was it Bill Richardson? Was that 2013? Yeah, the Guelph Transit was fired.
Yeah,
well,
Maher came aboard in 2013, fall 2013, him. November 2013, I think.
So they've had some trouble at the top in previous years, too. I would call it a troubled department, I suppose. So is the search on? No, somebody's filling in temporarily, right?
I think it's David Anders, who's the head of emergency services, is temporary filling in. It is posted. The job is posted.
Indeed.ca,
you can go and apply for general manager of Guelph Transit.
Why not?
If you are so fit. I almost think I should put in an application, but I don't have I don't know what you would call it.
You could do
executive managerial experience.
You could do a tally of the hours you've rode the bus. That's pretty good.
Yeah. If only that was kind of like
benchmark
hours logged, right? But no, it's kind of sad and bizarre because there was this transit growth strategy that there was actually a lot of excitement about. I mean, would it have been the answer? No. Would it have required spending more money on transit? Yes. But what was key in it? It was like being developed within the city, which unlike the previous changes to Guelph Transit, which was an outside consultation process, this was actually being developed in the city by city staff. And Phil Maher was someone who led the process on that. Now it's not going to happen. Or if it is going to happen, it's going to happen after 2018 when the service rationalization is done.
Yeah, because they had fairly big plans, right? It was like, we're going to spend this many million over, I think it was 10 years, 13 something over 10 years.
Yeah.
But they've also, I think, separate to that, have applied for some federal and provincial money, haven't they?
For new buses.
For new buses. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It's 24 new buses, which has to happen eventually because, you know, buses break down and have to be replaced. So it's not, I mean, it's good news to get new buses, nice new buses. But, I mean, we're going to get new buses at some point anyway. And the feds are just going to kick in half the price now.
Big announcement. Justin will come.
Oh, speaking of Justin, we're going to deal with him in a second. But first, we are going to go to an ad break and play some music. You are, of course, listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
CFRU Archive. Waiting by the door. So I work on them towboats with my slippery city shoes. Though I swore I would never do that again. Through the great fog-bound straits where the cedars stand awaiting.
Oh, isn't that lovely? That's a taste of the Barbers, Jill and Matthew Barber, the Barber family album. That's a Ian Tyson song called Summer Wages. Some of you might recognize it.
We like to give things away, as apparently does the Trudeau government. At least that's so far as influence might seem. The Trudeau government's taken some hard knocks lately for these access for cash, quote-unquote, fundraisers, where cabinet ministers, parliamentary secretaries, even the prime minister himself, sort of like the guest of honor at these sort of private affairs where you pay $500, $1,000 upwards to the maximum of $1,525, and you get to hang out with your favorite cabinet minister, whether it's Bill Morneau or Navdeep Bains, I think, is another one that stuck out.
Melanie Jolie is my favorite. Am I allowed a favorite? I guess. I don't know.
Why not?
I'm not going to pay.
This Navdeep Bains one, which was $400 per person, and it was called the Vineyards of Ontario event, which, like, if you want to sound like you're snobbily hobnobbing with the rich and the out of touch and just like the bourgeoisie, definitely hold an event called Vineyards of Ontario and charge $400 per person to come and sip wine when you're the frickin' innovation minister, man.
I love the alliteration of snobbly hobnobbing.
Snobbly hobnobbing.
Yes, this is called pay-to-play access or cash for access. Now, supposedly, they are very strident in saying there's been no ethical breaches in doing this, that it's completely legit and above board, but boy, does it look sort of dirty, eh?
Oh, it looks dirty.
It looks just kind of dirty. So some of the tickets, the cap, because the cap on a donation is $1,500. You can also donate, I think it's $1,525 to a riding association. So they can technically milk people for just over $3,000, and it's completely legit.
Yeah.
The one that smells really bad was the one that took place in the condo. Was it Nancy Spencer or Pencer, right? There was I think he's a funeral home executive, Michael Benjamin. Mm-hmm. That was the one starring Bill Morneau. And somehow Apotex, you know, the company was involved as well. Mm-hmm. So there seems to be this, like, I would call it the gray area. It's not so gray because we really know what's going on, right? You know, I don't think the majority of people in this province couldn't buy this access. So who goes? The company goes. Now, do they, you know, is it the wheels at the top? Is it the middle people? It's obviously not the people from the shop floor. I don't know. But to say that it doesn't influence things, I think is, you know, this is mythical stuff because there's no way that there isn't some sort of link or a connection created there or a business card exchanged or some sort of even nodding acquaintance to say, hey, there's Johnny from Apotex. You know, like, To most people, it smells bad. They're saying they're not doing anything illegal. I don't think, you know, they're obviously not doing anything illegal, but...
No, letter of the law, it's not illegal.
And if it was charitable, if they were doing it, you know, have a time with Judy Wilson-Raybould or whoever, and it's going to the Cancer Society, there's probably a law against that as well. But it wouldn't look as bad. But it's like, if you're paying to play, then you're paying to play. Right?
Yeah, you know... I agree with you about the smell, but I'm of two minds of it, and one is that this is what politics is.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, and this is how it's always been. This is how it's always going to be, and you know,
well,
perhaps. Well,
that's my wishful thinking.
Depending on how hopeful you are, but you know, this is
come
kind
the
of
revolution.
Where,
these things won't happen. No,
jeez. but I mean,
insert the disclaimer here.
Right.
Yeah, sorry about that.
This is how,
yeah.
But this is how you know, sort of things get done, and connections are made. And I'm sort of reminded of the whole thing about that's happened to bring it back to the U.S. election, but with Hillary Clinton and how she met with 70 people who were donors to the Clinton Foundation. But some of the donors were like people like Melinda Gates. And it's like, well, you mean to tell me that Hillary Clinton wouldn't meet with Melinda Gates unless she gave a kickback, quote unquote, to the Clinton Foundation first? No, of course not. But I mean, it is a way for high level people to get high level access to high level politicians. And, you know, I understand that perhaps the financial minister of Canada can't meet with every Scotty Hertz and
I want to meet
Donaldson out
we
there.
We got $15.
Yeah, but
I don't want a tax receipt. Yeah,
but I mean, yeah, this is sort of how it's always been done. The flip side of it is, and Rona Ambrose got into like quite the. You know, she got on the soapbox pretty handily this week in terms of attacking an equestrian period and comparing it to what's going on, an entirely separate matter altogether in Ontario, where Kathleen Wynne's former deputy chief of staff might be getting criminal charges pressed against her for the whole thing that happened
and
in Sudbury last.
Jerry Lougheed, who's a fundraiser, right? This is
yeah.
the brush of the fundraiser seems to be. And in Montreal, too, that's just breaking today, right?
Yes.
Three of them. There's some
yes, that's
something
right.
sketchy going. We can talk about that another day. But it's fundraiser seems to be the key word, though.
But she was using the what's happening with Wynne to smear what's happening with Trudeau. And I just wanted to point out that the Conservative Party of Canada, first 3 months of this year, $5.5 million in fundraising.
Hmm.
Better than the Liberals and the NDP combined. So, sure... the Liberals, got this number from Vice, have held like almost 100 of these, or will have held almost 100 of these Cash for Access fundraisers by the end of November. But clearly, people, while I guess some people care about the access isn't a huge deterrent for people who want to dump money into the political process, as evidenced by the Conservatives. Conservatives don't have access anymore, but still, their fundraising is trouncing not only the party that's in government, but one of the other opposition parties together, and if they pooled their money.
Yeah, exactly. And they've always been the champs, I think, of fundraising for sure. And it's funny, Rona Ambrose talking about does she have the highest expenses in Parliament? I think so. Lives in Stornoway as well, you know.
I would have to look up the numbers.
Something like that. I think it's big bucks. But anyway, it's interesting you mentioned Hillary Clinton because it seems... One of the WikiLeaks talks about Hillary Clinton being kind of PO'd with the Liberals and that they wanted to turn her visit. She had a speaking engagement with a group called Canada 2020 who seemed to have Liberal leaks.
Yeah.
And one of the, as this is going back to the email leaks, Abedin, I think this came from Abedin, was that that Hillary wasn't too Hillary. I know her personally, Hillary. Secretary of State Clinton was not pleased that the Liberals were trying to parlay this into some sort of fundraiser. I think they had big plans for shots of her and Justin and
the future of North American leadership.
Yeah, and one of the comments allegedly was that while this guy is probably going to be the prime minister, and this was back in October 2014. This was a full year before it happened. So WikiLeaks are interesting in that respect. I mean, I think they do have to be taken with a grain of salt, but it was that slice of it right in the middle of this sort of gray area. I wouldn't call it gray money, but gray area stuff where it's like, oh, you really, you're really trying to make this into, you know, just give us your cash kind of stuff. So, and access too. It's like, because they had, what was the other one? There was something posted. It was, you know, come and have breakfast with. I think this was part of it. Like, you could win the actual fundraiser tied to this was like you could win a flight to Ottawa and have a breakfast with Justin and a senior advisor and a chance to hear Hillary Clinton. So it was like you're sort of buying a ticket to this package deal.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what it's for a donation. I don't know what the donation was, but I'm sure the bigger it is, probably the happier they are. Maybe they put those into a different goldfish bowl for the draw. I don't know. But yeah, it's shameless stuff in my view. I wish it wasn't this way. And they did put the laws in place to sort of to reduce the amount as well, right? But yet we still see it.
Yeah, and it's worth pointing out that the federal government as compared to like British Columbia and Ontario, which is like the Wild West of fundraising.
Yeah,
at least in Canada, even Alberta. Alberta just instituted changes last year. Rachel Notley did that. They couldn't accept union and corporate donations, which is something that the federal level's done for a while, but it's new to Alberta. I mean, there are still really kind of no caps on donations in Alberta, but tying that down a bit more was a relatively new thing out there. But for BC, I mean, the stories about, you know, kind of what goes on in BC would, you know, make probably Rona Ambrose's head explode. It's the Wild West out there, and it's in Ontario to a certain extent, but the spotlight has been on Kathleen Wynne and the Liberals here in Ontario, and understandably so, given everything that's going on. So Ontario might even be forced to tie itself down in terms of some of these fundraising responsibilities. Yep. And indeed, some politicians have been pushing for that, and perhaps most notably Green Party leader Mike Schreiner.
Well, now that there's bribery charges, I mean, that's, you know, not directly related to the fundraising, but sort of. There's a fundraiser involved. So
there was a fundraiser involved, and it involved, you know, getting out of the way. So, you know, maybe we'll give you a
job. Andrew Oliver, right? The candidate that they didn't want, presumably, allegedly. Yeah. I'm sure we'll be talking about it at a future date.
Yeah. We're going to talk right now, though, about what is happening and what has happened in Standing Rock last week. About this time last week, reportedly hundreds of armed state and local police, plus some National Guards people, apparently raided the protest camps along the Standing Rock Sioux Reserve, where they are protesting the pipeline being constructed, the North Dakota Access Pipeline, which will carry crude from North Dakota to Chicago. Many reports of people being brutalized, pepper spray, rubber bullets, riot gear, dogs, the whole shebang. Sound cannons too. thought it was safe, they bring out the sound cannons like they're going after friggin' Noriega. But 6 hours, this raid took place over 6 hours. A lot of it was broadcast over social media and all its brutality. As bad as it was before for this company trying to build this pipeline, I think they really kind of kicked themselves in the teeth on trying to end this with the surgical precision of a sledgehammer.
Yeah, calling the militarized police. It sounds like there was some fresh pepper spraying yesterday, too. There's people trying to cross over a river, and there's a shot of the militarized police shooting that. And this isn't just a little can of pepper spray, like for somebody who's assaulting you. This is like the King can of pepper spray, bulk, shooting it at
people. It's the Costco pepper spray.
Costco pepper spray, exactly. 10 kiloton thing, and they're holding up tarps trying to deflect it. Now, what's come out of this? There's a few things have happened this week. One was, and we'll get into this in too much detail, the Bundys who took over the park walked free.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing the Bundys essentially doing the same thing, and it's somewhere they probably shouldn't be. It wasn't ancestral land. It was the ancestral land of another indigenous tribe, the Paut tribe, I think they're called. And the Bundys sort of trashed a bunch of sacred sites there. So it's a bit,
it's government land. We talked about this earlier this year.
But they walked away. That's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, they took over this wildlife preserve with guns and ammo. Yep. And I can't remember the reason why, but it was like these guys
government,
are,
man. Yeah,
these why, guys are, you know, sort of, I can't remember the name of the term, but the freedom people.
Yeah, they're so memorable we can't remember. But just imagine if anybody at Standing Rock showed up with a gun, how long they would last. They would last probably 1 minute. Before they would be.
Well, that was the irony of it, was that you had this situation where you had these heavily armed white people taking over government land for months, and everyone was like, oh, they'll get tired and leave. But, you know, you have several hundred Aboriginal people peacefully protesting with no weapons, and, you know, you send in G.I. Joe to kick them.
Yeah, and it's some of the police seem to be above board than other. The security guards, there's lots of overlap, but of course they all work in tandem. There's the guys with the dogs that were attacking people,
and it's hard to tell them apart sometimes when they're in riot gear.
Yeah,
who's an official police officer and who's private security?
Because I believe that's constitutional as well, that they need to identify themselves, right?
But right.
It's the same in Canada too. Another thing that happened was sort of related was the pipeline explosion in Alabama. Now this was a fuel pipeline, but nonetheless causing no end of damage. I think one person was killed and five were injured. These pipelines, whether it's fuel or oil or dilbit or whatever it is, these aren't benign things. And the protesters in Standing Rock have a very good point. And it's gone to the point which I believe Obama has come out and said that they're going to try and reroute the thing now. As to, I mean, I think it'll still have to cross the Missouri River. And I mean, the Missouri isn't just the water supply for the Standing Rock Sioux and others. It's the whole area. If we think back to, and I know we've talked about this before, the Enbridge pipeline break in Kalamazoo, which spilled, you know, equivalent material into the, you know, miles and miles and miles of spillage. And the problem with this diluted bitumen is that it's very difficult to break down and or to get it in this. It has so many parts to it that it's difficult to gather it all up.
Yeah.
That's not to say that an oil spill is great or a fuel spill is great. None of it is great. Once it's in the water and they spend billions of dollars or however much, $1 billion trying to undo it, it's like, why didn't you take the precautions in the first place? And I think if we saw these pipelines and said, okay, there's no chance that this thing is going to rupture or explode, then people probably wouldn't be as against them. But then, of course, you know, we have this situation in Standing Rock. So, of course, redirecting the pipeline is going to take a heap of time and money and probably more police. But is it going to come to head? I don't think they're going to be able to just clear the people out at this point. I mean, they're entrenched for the long haul. So whether Obama, maybe this will be one of the last things of his presidency, is to try and broker this. Mm. Who knows? Depending on what else goes on in the scheme of things. But it may be up to the next president. And boy, depending on who that is, it could be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed. Considering that Donald Trump will throw out protesters, even protesters who are there in favor of him with extreme severity.
Beat on them.
I do wonder.
Get rid of them. I don't like get rid of them.
Yeah, I do wonder how a President Trump would treat peaceful Aboriginal protesters. The other side of this was, again, coming back to police surveillance. There was allegations that police were following the Standing Rock protest Facebook page to see who was checking into the site and creating lists off that.
A million people checked in, right?
Yeah. And well, I think it was Snoops pointed out that if the police were doing that, it would be kind of impractical, because if you were there to start trouble, you would have to do to evade detection is not check into the Facebook site. Mm-hmm. So I think the Standing Rock Sioux probably appreciate the support of all these people from like Guelph and Toronto and Miami just logging
Amsterdam.
Into the site. But
Leipzig.
Still, I mean, I would have said, you know, wouldn't put it past them. But, I mean, we've seen that this week. Montreal police monitoring journalists on you know, electronically.
Mm-hmm. And that list is getting longer, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like it was started off with one, and then some of whom are with the CBC and others. But
so it's on the one hand, it's kind of hard to take it seriously. But on the other hand, it's not easy to dismiss it either.
No. You need to get the burner phone from 7-Eleven or whatever. Note, not an ad for 7-Eleven phones. I just it's the first one that popped to mind.
Well, certainly people in Guelph are well acquainted with the burner phone.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a robocall.
Pierre, give us a call. Yeah.
But yeah, it's. I mean, it's coming to, certainly coming to a head because work is still progressing on this pipeline. It's getting kind of closer and closer to the river, which is kind of like the last line of defense, mm-hmm. I guess. So I mean, it, certainly things are going to come to a head, and I do wonder what'll happen once we're kind of within range of the river that you know that construction clearly. You know, it's kind of the red line, I guess. Yep. What will happen then is there going to be more violence? Might people be prone to violence to try and in this one last-ditch effort to stop stop construction, or might government step in before that and say, well, before we, you know, do you know what we can't go back from, let's take a minute and.
And there's a couple of weird, ironic things happening, like the burning of tires. Like, if you're pro-environment, you probably shouldn't be burning tires.
Oh,
I know
sure.
it's a great way to create a barricade, but it just, you know, not good at all. And also, a lot of the protesters, at least the ones on Wednesday, if I understand it right, were charged under the Clean Water Act. without a hint of irony, it's like, oh, because they were trying to build a bridge over the river to get to this property where they were subsequently pepper sprayed, thankfully not shot, but... If tensions keep increasing and the amount of militarized stuff keeps arriving, then we're definitely going to see, and I hope not, but it's one of those things that has to come to a head, unless they can go into some kind of negotiations and sit down with all parties, probably as it would probably at this point take as high as the president to be present. Yeah, you know, UN style, let's say. If they don't do that, this is just going to keep on going and keep on going until who knows.
And the UN has said that all construction should stop until the concerns of the indigenous people are met. I think the UN released that statement last Saturday. But yeah, I think you're right. And it will be interesting to see what happens from here. Because it, you know, tensions are high. There's a lot of money at stake. We talked last time about how this project is over budget, over schedule. On top of it all, we know that law enforcement in North Dakota is kind of ready, willing, and able to use whatever legal tools they need to shut down, protests, whether it's, Amy Goodman or, some of these local, Aboriginal people. Anyway, I want to do a shout-out for this before we say goodnight. It does concern Standing Rock. There's a Guelph benefit concert for Standing Rock and the Chippewa of the Thames, who are a group fighting water issues of their own here in Ontario. It is a benefit concert for them. There will be music, spoken word, silent auction. Admission is $10 or pay what you can. It is on Saturday, November 12th at 8 p.m. It is at Red Papaya on in Old Quebec Street. And if you want more information, you can go to guelphgap@gmail.com. And if you want more information about what's coming up in Open Sources, because we do have stuff coming up on Open Sources here, next week, Carl Wettstein, Ward 6 City Councilor, will be in studio. And on December 8th, Leanne Piper will be joining us. And then we will be having our second annual Ask Mayor Cam Guthrie show, and we'll be asking you to send in questions for that. We will have an official sort of start sending us your questions now moment in the near future, because that will be December 15th, where we will have Mayor Guthrie in for the hour. And in the meantime, send us your questions for Carl and or Leanne. And as well, remember, we do have the American Election Show on Tuesday with Scotty and loads of special guests and perhaps even myself calling in. And if that isn't enough Open Sources for you, you can go to opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter, and you can download the podcast on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through iTunes. You can get in touch with me at Adam A. Donaldson. on Twitter or through guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Twitter, Scotty Hertz on Facebook. I'm one friend away from 500, so become my friend and I'll have 500 friends. I also blog at a place called The Spanner Book.
500th friend of Scotty Hertz on Facebook.
I'll buy you a cupcake. I don't know. Something.
Gets a Tim Hortons gift card worth $5. Maybe?
Or $500.
Well, there you go. Anyway, stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we will be back here twice next week with more open sources. Tuesday at night at 8 and Thursday at 5 p.m. And we will see you then.